If you believe assault is an act, not an adjective, your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Yeah. Good morning, everyone. Man, that just gets you up and punches you right straight in the face, doesn't it? Man, I love that. Whether you like it or not, that rocks. Okay, here we go. Thank you very much, RJ Hinder and crew. Another fine addition. Thank you very much for sending your audience this way. I welcome everybody, good folks listening to RJ Hinder, and incorporated you in with the 2A Radio family. I'm feeling good. So, a little bit of housekeeping, guys. First of all, right here at RBN, Republic Broadcasting, we're always trying to spread the word and get the truth and the information out there to the masses. Well, we could always use a little bit of help from friends. So, for $8, $8, that's it, and it's flat fee, $8, you can get 100 generic RBN cards. I say generic because they don't have anybody's name and title on them that you can hand out. And these are good looking cards. These are not just some sort of cheap thing that came off a laser printer or bubble jet. These are very nice printed cards. Now, I come from a printing background. I was raised in a print shop. I know what good work is and I know what garbage shortcuts are. This is good looking stuff. For $8, you can get 100 of these cards to hand out. You can also, it also comes with a bumper sticker, that's included, as well as a free copy of Aaron Russo's America, From Freedom to Fascism. If you have not seen this particular video, it's a movie, it's a documentary that Aaron Russo did. It was his last project before he died of cancer. And RBN's own Dave Champion happened to be one of Aaron's consultants on this movie, because he goes into a lot of things dealing with taxes as well. It's a very, very encompassing movie. I saw this thing a couple years ago. It is great. And again, Dave Champion, he has his show here on RBN Monday through Friday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon Central Time. He has the hour just before John Stadtmiller comes on. So he had involvement in Freedom to Fascism. And with that being said, $8 is going to get you the 100 business cards, the bumper stickers, and Aaron Russo's Freedom to Fascism. And you can get that one of two ways. You can either send the $8 in to 2251 Double Creek Boulevard. That's two different words. Double, then Creek, I guess three different words, then Boulevard, Suite 302. Okay? That's in Round Rock, two different words, Texas, TX, 78664. Or you can call up. You can call 800-724-2719, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time. 800-724-2719, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time. And you can get all of this, the 100 cards, as well as the bumper sticker, as well as Aaron Russo's copy, From Freedom to Fascism, for $8. So take care of that. Got plenty of news, information, commentary, all that great stuff coming up in the rest of the show. So stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is live. 1-800-313-9443.
Hello? Is this thing on? Hey guys, it's Bill. I am back. I am live. I am under the weather, but at least I'm feeling a little bit better. You heard a rebroadcast of, I think it was February 3rd's show yesterday. I appreciate everybody sticking with me with my travel from last week and my illness from this week. I have a head cold that's kicking my butt, and I hate being sick. I'm just miserable. I didn't even get out of bed yesterday. I just spent the whole day in bed, drinking juices, light on the food, chilling out, trying to get better. I do feel better today. So it actually was, two, three days ago now that the new law allowing us to carry in national parks has been reestablished. This is something that started back in the early part of the George W. Bush administration, better part of 10 years ago, to change executive policy about carrying guns in parks. And it finally went into effect about a year ago. And, of course, that was taken to an ultra-liberal judge who looked at it and said, oh, yeah, well, we can't have any of that. Because the 7.5, 8 years worth of looking into this at the Bush Department, that the Bush administration did, wasn't good enough. So, bam, they can't do that. So the Judicial Department said the Executive Department couldn't do something under the Executive Department's mandate. So, anyhow, they couldn't do it. So it went back to can't carry guns in parks. So then with the, the Defense Appropriations Bill or, no, I'm sorry, it wasn't that. It was the Credit Card Reform Bill. With the Credit Card Reform Bill, when that went into effect, three days ago, I think it was, it's the same time that we could carry guns in national parks. Now, that's good for us who like to carry guns, but the one thing that ticks me off is these riders, these little addendum laws that get tagged onto any main law. Not a fan. Don't believe that that should even be allowed. Every single piece of legislation should have to be written, argued, and voted on, up or down, on its own merits. Now, I am a fan, if we're going to have a less-than-perfect system, I'm a fan that this writer got through. However, realize the reason that we can't buy new full-auto guns post-May 1986 is because of an 11th hour rider on the 1986 Gun Owners Protection Act. It was a Gun Owners Protection Act that did not allow, that made a law that no longer can we as civilians own any fully automatic guns, Class 3 fully automatic guns, manufactured after May 1986. Got it? So the newest full auto gun you can buy right now, if you live in a Class 3 state, you go through all the paperwork, all the checks, all the blah-da-da-da-da. Oh, and the fees involved. The newest one you can buy is about 25 years old. That's it. The newest machine gun you buy is about a quarter century old. Now, what does that do for safety? Nothing. It really does nothing. All it does is it ensures a very slow, yet still incrementally steady and mathematically certain probability that we will eventually not have any full-auto guns left in civilian hands in America. That which is legal for the government but illegal for the citizenry is tyranny. Thomas Jefferson. So it was a writer that got us this okay, this reestablished right to carry in national parks. I mean, it's our land. We own it. The Second Amendment is our inalienable right, not for the government to deal with. But yet, for some reason or another, back in the day, they said we can't carry our guns in our parks. Well, who the hell are you as the government to tell us that we can't do that? I'm sorry, guys. Doesn't work that way. Just doesn't work that way. Anyhow, we've now been allowed by our government to carry guns in our national parks again. We've been anointed that privilege, however long it lasts. So, if anybody goes out there and screws up, or starts leaving big messes in national parks from shooting in areas and leaving trash and everything, you can bet that that's going to get repealed, and we'll have yet another constitutional battle on our hands on that garbage. As you can tell, I'm not exactly overly joyed about the whole thing because of the process, and it shouldn't have been, it shouldn't have happened to be given back to us in a law to begin with. Should have never been taken away. And then on top of that, these writers suck. I mean, just they suck. I'll give you an example of a writer written by the former governor and former senator of Nevada, Richard Bryan. Now, Richard Bryan was a governor for 8 years. He actually, one of the other governors quit or moved on or I don't know what. He filled the last 2 years of his seat. And then won election, and then won re-election, served 2 years of the re-election, and then ran for U.S. Senator. This is back in, I don't know, 92 or something. He retired in 2002. John Ensign ended up with his seat. So, when he vacated. So here was the thing. Richard Bryan owed one to the environmentalists. So, and I'm paraphrasing kind of the way this whole thing goes on. He says to the environmentalists, I'm leaving office. What can I do for you? I owe you one. And they said, we want to protect a couple of areas in northern Nevada. One of them being Black Rock Desert. We want to protect those and make those much less usable to the general public. Well, pardon me. Richard Bryan knew this was most likely an unpopular thing to do in Nevada, his home state. But he did a little due diligence and sent a query to the county commissions of all 17 counties in the state of Nevada. There are 17 counties here. Asking them, what are your thoughts as a county commission if we restrict Black Rock Desert, and here would be the provisions of the law. 16 of the 17 said, we do not agree with this. We do not agree with this at all. Don't do it. The 17th county, Clark County, where Las Vegas is, all the way at the bottom of the state, all the way south, and Black Rock Desert is all the way north. The Clark County Commission said, it is so far away from us, has nothing to do with us, does not interact with Clark County whatsoever. We render no opinion. So nobody said yes. 16 of 17 said no. All right. I don't know if the Declaration of Independence passed with a greater margin. So Richard Bryan failed to heed the information that he got back from these county commissioners and tacked it on to the, I think it was 2000 or two, was it the 2000 or 2001, I believe it was, national budget. As a writer, along with you know hundreds of other writers, it's really a coattail deal. You know the budget's going to pass, so put all these other sorry ass bills on there. Now sometimes good bills don't pass, and of course the people that write those bills and the people that write the writers that were on the bills go to the press and they say, oh, the president didn't sign this bill into law, or the bill didn't pass because the other party held it up, or we didn't get the votes, whatever. When in fact, oftentimes that happens because the writers are so stinky, they make the main bill unpassable. Otherwise, we end up with a good bill that passed and some stinky, sorry, horrible writers that go with it. Writers should be against the rules, disallowed completely at every level of the game. From your town board to Congress. It should be completely eliminated. No writers. Every bill has to be written, considered, and voted on its own individual merits. Never again should we ever allow another writer. What this helps to do is slow down all the garbage bills in front of Congress to begin with. They have more to do. In addition to that, every single bill, this is Bill Carr's thought, every single bill passed should have, if it's not already less than 10 years, like the federal budget, which has it's annual, every law should have a 10-year expiration date. Every single one of them. Whether it's higher taxes or tax cuts. Whether it's an anti-gun law or pro-gun law. You know, whether it's something to do with dealing with the environment or dealing with big industry, every single law should have 10-year time limit. Reason is, things change. We had the big upheaval of the assault weapons bill and large high-capacity magazine bill, where they took away our sport utility rifles and our standard capacity magazines. Totally ridiculous, did absolutely nothing. To pass a law to repeal that would not have been popular, and it wouldn't have happened, right? But they realized after 10 years, you know, this was worthless, so they didn't renew it. Imagine if that were the case with the Gun Owners Protection Act, with the rider that we can no longer have full-auto guns made after May of 1986. Well, in May of 96, that would have come to an end. There would have been 10 years surplus worth of guns. Now, full-auto guns come back onto the market if we're able to repeal that law somehow, someday. A lot of people are going to lose a lot of fortunes because they have a lot of money tied up in these full-auto guns, and that sucks. However, in the overall scheme of things, it's good for the country to be able to have full-auto guns in the hands of citizens to keep the bad guys and the bad guys from the alphabet organizations at bay. Stay tuned. More to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
You can have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us right now. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
By the way, guys, I want to say, when I was in here a couple of days ago, I did get a message, asked to call one of the listeners, Jerry. Jerry, I'm sorry, I've been really sick. I will be calling you after the show today. So I did not forget about you. I've just been really sick. So just want to let you know that. All right, so Jerry, I'll be giving you a call in an hour and a half, something like that. Okay, going back to this whole thing with a 10-year lifespan on bills, here's the deal. Congress is only going to be effective for about another, 10 years, which is a blip in the time of the screwing of the American public by the jackbooted thugs in D.C. Because after about 9.5 years, they're going to have to start reconsidering what was really important that got passed 10 years ago, and really what was kind of an expiration thing, kind of a payback deal, a big business thing, stuff like that. So if they're able to pull the wool over our eyes once and pass something that sucks, in 10 years, we will have really figured out the effects of that sorry bill. And their ability to repass it's going to be severely hampered. In addition to that, they're not going to be able to consider new garbage like that when they have to look at all the old garbage that's coming up. So it would literally take one, cut a whole leg out from underneath the body of Congress. They'd be hobbling around on one leg in about 9.5 years. All right? So that's absolutely good, because the people who are in Congress believe that they are smarter than the rest of us. They're there, so they're smarter. They must know better. They are our caretakers, which is not the deal. They're actually our slaves, our minions, our dogs that are supposed to do as they are told to do. They are the pets. We are the masters. They seem to forget that, and we seem to allow them to crap on our carpet and then wag their tail as we pick it up. So no more of that. Anyhow, 10-year lifespan on all bills passed is something to keep them at bay. A couple of nights ago, I took my stands, and this last weekend on Sunday, I spent the whole day in the shop with a buddy of mine, Scott. I gotta thank Scott quite a bit for spending the day with me. But between the two, we're in the shop together for 8 hours, doing just a couple of really not that big a deal of modifications to the stand. However, there were six of them, so we had to do it to six stands. Figure out a couple of angles, set up a whole bunch of tooling, do a bunch of work, and then clean up the shop. So all that was 8 hours. So, again, Scott, thank you. You're a friend, man. You really are. So we got these stands together. Tuesday night, I took him into Vegas to show a couple of these to a guy at a pretty good-sized local business. And talked to him a little bit about the business plan, things that are going on. Got some very good response from that. And then the guy who's a good friend of mine for the last few years, actually used to be a roommate of mine for a little while, who did the introductions, he invited me to go to an IPSC indoor shooting match that started like an hour and a half later. I didn't feel that good, but I did have my gear with me. I said, all right, what the heck? So I've never done IPSC, IPSC, International Practical Shooting Confederation, I believe is what IPSC stands for. And I've never shot it. I've shot IDPA, International Defensive Pistol Association, but not IPSC. Because with IPSC, I'm pretty sure that those were the guys that have these really fancy 1911 race guns or Glocks that are totally tricked out and silly and, in my mind, just completely ridiculous and stupid. Like a guy that, I don't know, buys a Porsche and turns it into a four-wheel drive. It's just, how stupid is that? So I look at these guns along the same line. So sure enough, I sign up. And the guy says, what are you shooting? I said, I'm shooting a 1911. He says, okay, what kind of optics you got? I don't have any optics. This is just a 1911. Single stack 1911. You know, regular sights, regular gun. It's a defensive gun. I carry it around. I practice with it in case I need to shoot people, not targets. Okay. He says, you're in the single stack major. All right, sounds good. He says, which is good because there's only like three or four of us that ever shoot in that, so it's easy to place high. I'm like, whatever, dude. I'm only going to shoot two out of the four stages, maybe anyhow. So sure enough, I get there and you get all of these guys, and the term is gear queer, where you get these guys that they will spend a couple of $1,000, maybe $3,000 on a 1911 that's all souped up. It's double stacked, got this huge fluted magazine wall, big enough that a small child could wear the magazine wall as a hat. It looks like a beanie off of a kid. They have these magazines that are way extended. Literally, they're 30, 35 round magazines that go into these double stack guns. They've got these compensators on the end, like a 5-inch barrel, and then you got a good inch or two compensator on the end of it, so there's no muzzle flip. Makes you wonder what they're compensating for. And then they've got some sort of electronic sight mounted onto the gun. It's just ridiculous. So a whole bunch of guys set up with gear like this I end up shooting against. Even with all of that, on the couple of stages I shot, I outshot many of them with their very trick guns, with my standard gun. And it's a combination of score and time. So all of that garbage does not replace technique. I was not impressed. As a matter of fact, I was ashamed because these guns are not usable for shooting at people, which is what a 1911 was designed for. It's designed for the military. Dorks. Anyhow, guys, stay tuned. More to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
By dictators since 1917. The 2A radio show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
Welcome back. So I want to let you know, I said something on Tuesday's show, I think that was the last time I was here, it was Tuesday, about the handgun shoot we're putting on for Shalene Nightingale, candidate for governor in California, very anti-gun state. When the Brady campaign to completely screw everybody out of owning a gun in America, I think that's her official name, when they rank California as the number one state on their list, you know that place sucks for owning guns. So, Shalene, being as conservative as she is, has, I guess, gotten together with me. We're putting on a two-day defensive weekend. It's a weekend defensive handgun course is what it is, to benefit Chalene's campaign. And we're rapidly putting this thing together. It's, you know, the ideas have finally started coming. We're in the last week. We've got a range. I have an outline for everything that's to be going on. I just sent it off. I got a message from one of the ladies that is one of the main supporters in the campaign, a lady by the name of Kate. Now, Kate sent out an email. There's a small group of us that are, you know, sending emails every couple of days on updates. She talked with a guy that's a caterer that's going to be coming up there and said something about the food. Now, the entrance fee, I'm not exactly sure what it's going to be yet, but it's going to be a lot cheaper than you'll ever be able to just take a course because it benefits the campaign. All of the staff are donating their time, so the expenses are a lot lower, so they can afford to do that. They're going to include all the range fees and lunch in this deal. All you have to do is bring your gear and 500 rounds of ammo. Everything else taken care of, right? It's it's a little under an hour from LAX, and LAX is out on the coast. It's in, what is it, Monterey, I think. So from the coast to the range is about a 50-minute drive. So from the L.A. base in the L.A. area, the Inland Empire, everything like that, it's all less than an hour. So the millions of people who are around there can easily get up there, take the class, go home at night, come back in the morning, take the class, go home at night. It'll be Saturday-Sunday deal. So, carrying on. With the caterer, now keep in mind, I'm sick. I've been sick. I haven't been eating much at all the last 3 or 4 days. It's the one thing about being sick. It's a good diet, right? Because your nose doesn't work, you're not smelling the food, your nose is a very, very powerful thing when it comes to what the rest of your body's going to do. You don't smell food, you don't really develop much of an appetite, you don't eat that much. Well, her description, this guy said that he does tri-tip sandwiches, he does pulled pork sandwiches, and he does a half and half, where it's pulled pork on top of tri-tip. And I got to tell you, that sounds friggin' fantastic. I mean, I'm sick, I'm not feeling good, I don't even have much of an appetite, but just thinking about this and thinking about that luscious sandwich at lunch, gnawing on it, it going down the gullet with a little bit of barbecue sauce on, a little zest, a little tang, maybe on like a big sesame seed roll or a Kaiser roll or something like that. And just, oh, that sounds so good to me right now. Half pulled pork, half tri-tip. That is just awesome. As a matter of fact, I just got a message from my board operator. She says, tri-tip, yummy. It's like Homer, tri-tip and pulled pork. Anyhow, this shoot's going to be May 1st and 2nd. It's a Saturday, Sunday. It's a weekend offensive handgun course. Yours truly, I will be running the show. I will be bringing in, I am bringing in, some of the best instructors in the country, certainly on the West Coast. Guys that I have worked with a lot. Some guys I've worked with a little bit, but I know them well enough to invite them to come out. And it's going to be a big event, a lot of stuff. To sign up for this deal, they're going to have the page up probably within the next 4 or 5 days, hopefully by the end of the weekend. I'm hoping they have it by the end of this weekend, but they've got to make sure they get e-commerce involved in there. And then once you sign up, you're going to get a packet of stuff emailed to you with stuff, you know, things you need to know, liabilities you're going to need to send, blah, da, 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 da. So, you're going to go to nightingaleforgovernor.com, N-I-G-H-T-I-N-G-A-L-E, Nightingale. Okay, so night, not day, ing, as in that little song they have, I-N-G, on Sesame Street. Remember that one? It was an electric company. It's an electric company. And then ale, like a beer, Nightingale. .com, nightingaleforgovernor.com. That's where you'd go and sign up. I will have a link at 2aradio.com once they put up a link at Nightingale for Governor. It'll be a blurb, talk about it, click on the link, read all about it, then you can sign up. You'll do some sort of e-commerce online, PayPal, whatever it is. Look, guys, I know there's a big deal that PayPal is anti-gun, or they're not pro-gun, however it comes out. I think it's that they're not pro-gun. Okay, realize we have to get a little bit bigger picture on some of these things. Not everybody's going to sign up for a new GunPal account just to do this. I'm actually hoping that they bypass PayPal altogether and they just do direct e-commerce. I mean, they are a campaign. Something tells me they can take credit card, debit card contributions. They should be able to do a direct thing right off the site. That's what I'm hoping for. I'm hoping to avoid the whole PayPal thing altogether because some people are just going to be pissed off about it. If it's up there, please look at the bigger message here, okay? The bigger message is we're going to have very likely the largest defensive handgun course ever held in the state of California for a political candidate. On top of that, not only will it most likely be the largest defensive handgun course ever held in that state, it'll be to benefit an extremely conservative candidate. I look at Shalini as kind of the Ron Paul of the candidates running for that office and the governor of California. Very conservative, so conservative, bringing to light many more conservative ideals and getting those really debated, and they're having to deal with them within that race because she's bringing them up. Bright lady. Very bright lady. And nice as can be. Yet also shrewd in all the right ways. Just a nice lady. So anyhow, that's going to be May 1st and 2nd. Put that on your calendar. I want everybody to come out. The price for the course is a full donation. All the other costs involved, again, the range fees for both days and lunch for both days are going to be included. All right? So you'll need to bring your gun, your holster, your mags, mag pouches, or speed loaders and speed loader holsters. A chair, sunblock, a hat, you know, some water and Gatorade to drink, things like that. That's what you need to bring. The contribution, the fee for the class, which is contribution, and will include the range fees, lunch, the targets, the target stands, all the incidental expenses. Some of the staff are going to have to drive in very, very early, like literally leave 3 or 4 in the morning to get up there on time Saturday after working a full week. We're all going to be bunking very deep in a very cheap motel, several rooms at a roach coach. A roach motel, in order to keep the prices down. And then after the shoot's done on Sunday, break everything down, then drive back late on Sunday, get home very late, probably close to midnight, and then be back to work Monday morning. So a lot of sacrifices for the staff, who are not getting paid anything to do this, and they get treated to one night stacked deep in a roach motel. So whatever the cost of the course is, it's covering all of that. All right? The rest, which should be pretty good, is going to go to help support Shalene's candidacy for governor. So there you go. All right, I want to give you guys an update on the Las Vegas Metro deal where I have tried my damnedest to arrest an on-duty Metro officer for driving like a complete jackass on December 9th. So, that was a Wednesday night. My girlfriend and I had just left a movie. We were going to get some dinner. We're in Vegas. And this guy was doing what could only be legally described as reckless driving. Speeding, no signaling, unsafe lane change, just swerving from the right lane through the middle lane over to the left lane, screeching up to a red light. Once it turns green, pounding the gas through it, scooting back across all the way to the right lane through the middle of the intersection, cutting people off. Gets up to a right turn only lane, busts right through that, and then screeches into the parking lot of a Taco Bell to meet another waiting officer for lunch or snack or just BS. Okay, now, I've been a Las Vegas Metro cop. If you're going to go meet another cop, you don't park in a parking stall and then talk. What you do is driver door to driver door, you sit there and you chew the fat, and then you leave, and it's usually in the middle of a parking lot, kind of an abandoned one, or in an area where just nobody is, right? You don't pull into a Taco Bell. So I think Taco Bell was probably their spot for 482, which is their code for lunch. I think they were going 482 at Taco Bell. So this guy's driving like in the ultimate a-hole. So crappy, in fact. Any cop that would have seen that, provided this was not a cop on duty, it was just a regular citizen driving like that, any cop that would have seen it, including someone who is admin or just simply not in a marked car, would have pulled them over It was such an egregious, horrible, just insane amount of driving. Anybody would have pulled him over. Or at least called for a marked unit to pull them over. That's how bad this driving was. Anyhow, so I send in an email, try to get this thing going. It goes through a detective at Internal Affairs. For unknown reasons, it goes to a sergeant at Metro Internal Affairs. And he tells me, the guy that it's assigned to didn't even work that night. We don't know who had it. It wasn't signed out. Sorry, we can't do anything. So I retort with a couple other ways you could find out how to find out who this driver was. And then he comes, no, it's not going to work out. So we're just going to close the case. Okay, not good. I send another email. And every time I send an email, I send it to a copy of the sheriff's email address, which the sheriff doesn't directly get. Everything gets filtered before it gets to him. And then also a copy to Internal Affairs. So the last one was, you're supposed to be a professional investigator, not just a professional investigator, a supervising professional investigator, being the rank of sergeant. And you can't find out who is driving a car? Something tells me if a citizen sent you an email or called up and said, look, I saw this vehicle at this place at this time, this is a vehicle number, which is what I provided, doing what I can only describe as loading a body into the trunk of the vehicle. That's all I could possibly describe it as. Something tells me they'd find out who was driving the car. But because you have a citizen wanting to do a citizen's arrest in the form of writing a citation to that officer for reckless driving, they can't find out who's driving the car. Is there a cover-up? Absolutely, there's a cover-up. I ended up in the last email saying, therefore, I need to speak to the lieutenant. Okay, nothing happened. After about 4 or 5 weeks, I called the office of the sheriff. I got a sergeant on the line, and I told him the story. He says, all right, let me see what I can do about getting the lieutenant from Internal Affairs on this. I'll call you back. Calls me back. He calls the lieutenant, calls me back like 8 minutes later. Then in the conversation, I find out that this sergeant in the sheriff's office, who's been assigned to help the sheriff out, I know him. I used to work with him on Metro. Now, I left Metro in May of 96. They've added a couple thousand. I mean, they've had attrition of a couple thousand people and knew a couple thousand people now. I was only on the street for a couple years, and I know this guy. So we catch up a little bit. It was nice. That was during the second phone call. He said, look, he's a lieutenant. I can't do much about it. However, he said he's going to get a hold of you. He said he's been trying to get a hold of you. To that, I stopped him, and I said, well, that's funny. You tried to get a hold of me one time. I immediately answered the phone. I noticed that a number from Metro's Internal Affairs came in like 4 days after I sent the last email. They didn't leave a message. I wasn't near my phone to get it, and I haven't spoken to anybody at all. So anyway, I said, well, he said he'll call you. So he called me when I was in L.A. Called me as I'm sitting down to an early dinner at my favorite sushi restaurant in downtown L.A. last Wednesday. So I told him, I'm sorry, Lieutenant. You caught me as I'm sitting down to an early dinner at my favorite sushi restaurant in L.A. Call me back tomorrow. I'm busy as of about 11:30 in the morning. So you got to call me from the time you get in to 11:30. I'll be around. Okay. So he calls me, and I don't get to say much. All he gets to do is say, look, I've only been here for 2 weeks. I don't know the sergeant that you've been dealing with. I read his report. Everything looks in order. He talked to the captain at that area command. That captain didn't come back with anything. So, you know, there's nothing we could do. We don't know who the drivers are. Not going to be able to find out. So that's just the way it is. And I said, that's not good enough. You can get into that car. Look at the MCT unit, find the serial number of it, get a hold of the people at dispatch and say who was logged on to this particular unit, this particular MCT, the mobile computer terminal. Who was logged on to this one at this time in this unit? That'll tell you who was driving it. And then I didn't pause. I said, however, I realize that Metro has no interest whatsoever in having a citizen do essentially a citizen's arrest by citing an on-duty officer. I said, it's not unheard of. I can give you an actual case where it happened. Here was the officer involved. Here was the rough date. Here was the citation. This is how it was adjudicated. I know this because I know the cop. So, A precedent has been set. You just don't want it reset. You don't want that door open. People don't know anything about the old one because it was a fix-it ticket. This one the guy's going to have to deal with. And I realize you have no interest in doing that. Therefore, I don't expect that you're going to be doing everything you possibly can as if somebody called and said it looked like they were loading a body. So, therefore, if the captains have it in their hand, what do? Well, captains have been going to all the briefings, letting them know that this happened, and we don't know who drove it, but was driving the car, but, you know, the new Metro policy, and people are going to start getting suspended for doing this kind of thing. I said, okay, that's the best I can expect. That's what's going to happen. I said, however, if I ever see something like this again, I will be calling the Metro number immediately, following the cop, getting the supervisor there, and doing a citizen's arrest right then and there. So you might want to have the captains inform all of the squads that that'll be going down. So now I'm going to try and get a hold of the media in Las Vegas and spread the word and see if everybody can police the police because they didn't do due diligence on my case. Stay tuned, guys. More to come after the break.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Back off, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong, and this is not where you belong.
Hi, guys, welcome back. We know that a couple days back, we ended up in Littleton, Colorado, the home of Columbine. There was another gunman who walked into a middle school about 3 miles away from Columbine High School and shot two students when, and this guy was 32 years old. A math teacher tackled the guy, and a couple other people, I think they were staff, came out and helped tie this guy down and wait for cops. So he got off a couple of shots, shot two kids. One kid is still in the hospital as of last night. A girl got hit in the arm, the right forearm, I believe. She was treated and released. Nobody died. And the why a guy's going into a school to shoot people up, I don't know. But I understand it's a target-rich environment because it's a gun-free zone. That is why people pick schools to do shootings. They're gun-free zones. Well, after 9/11... and the stories of terrorists taking over planes and the stories of, you know, Flight 93 not working out, the guys took over. You've never seen anybody on a plane do anything bad that the other people on the plane, the other passengers, didn't take into their own account. They have beat the living hell and smacked down everybody that's gotten out of line on a plane ever since because they don't want to go through another reported 9/11. Same thing happened at this school. They weren't about to have another shooting, so a math teacher tackles this guy, takes him down. Other staff come in, intervene, and help out. The guy, the suspect in this, his name is Bruco Strong Eagle Eastwood. What an awesome name. Now, there was an interview with his father, War Eagle Eastwood. Another awesome name. Bruco Strong Eagle Eastwood and War Eagle Eastwood. Those are the most awesome names I have ever read in my entire life. It sucks that Bruco Strong Eagle Eastwood, I just had to say it again, is such a flake in the head that he takes a gun into a junior high school at 32 years old and starts shooting kids. He should be dead. Grab the gun, shoot him. My two cents... grab your gun and shoot him. Oh, can't do that. The reason he's still alive is schools are a gun-free zone. That's why other people are shot and he's not. Anyhow, we're starting to take it back, guys. We're starting to take it back. Be vigilant. I'll read a story on this tomorrow. And also a bunch of stuff on cops who've gotten out of line that are now getting their own. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you. In Congress, the executive and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Thanks very much, and stay tuned for the Lenman News Hour coming up next.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The 2A Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.